You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, 1, 2. Look like a little country. Some rock and roll and blues. 'Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight, we have Stephen Palmer, the bass player of Crazy Man Crazy, in the studio.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm sure tonight's show will be Crazy Man Crazy.
Well, that's kind of the goal. And whenever I sit down and talk to anybody, just the history of this band and talk about what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go.
Why don't we start with you?
Okay.
How did you become a bass player?
I would say we have to turn back the clock and show my age a little bit. I actually started playing bass somewhere around high school when I started playing guitar first. And back in the 70s, guitar meant you had to play like Jimi Hendrix or Jimmy Page. And then this magic thing happened, and I call it the Ramones. And when the Ramones happened and all of a sudden things became three chords and you can not have insane talent and actually be able to play music. And I just found this energy of punk rock bass to be something I just latched onto. You could hit it hard. You could play hard. You could get everything in you out of you. And it just felt great. So, yeah, I started playing bass, punk rocker, and joined bands and started bands and kept doing that and moving up the coast of California. Ended up in Seattle, kind of going through that whole grunge thing and post-punk thing. And then all along, I did own an upright bass. I bought it for like $400 off somebody. And it wasn't until I moved to Seattle that I met a gentleman by the name of Justin Curtis, who said, "Hey, you have an upright bass. I need an upright bass player. Do you think we can, you know, start doing this?" And he played a lot of country, Americana, rockabilly. And I started going to rockabilly shows and watching these guys and how they're hitting them and what's that weird clicking noise coming from. And I would go home and just blister my fingers trying to duplicate that sound. So that was probably about 20 years ago. So I've been playing upright bass ever since.
Exclusively upright bass?
I'll go. The members of Crazy Man Crazy, we all actually started a punk rock band just for fun. We called ourselves 9 Volt Nation. The idea would, we could open for ourselves. And we tell the club, "Hey, Crazy Man Crazy's coming, and we've got this great little opening band. They're punk rock. They're a lot of fun." And they go, "Yeah, sure." And then we'd warm up for ourselves and take the house's money. It was great. But we did one show and realized that that was just way too much work, and we were exhausted by the time Crazy Man Crazy came on. But yeah, I'll still play electric bass every now and then. But again, if you go back to that sensibility of why I wanted to play bass in the first place, there are these durable instruments, and as a punk rocker, you could just hit them hard and bang them around all you want. But as an upright bass, they're sturdy. And the way I play, where I'm just slapping and hitting the thing, I know I'm not going to break it, and you can still get out that energy out of it.
I take it you grew up in California?
Grew up in San Diego, yeah.
And you started then playing punk rock in high school?
Senior year. And it was punk rock, a loose term at the time. I was just always full of energy. We were just trying to find rock bands and that we could jump around and have a good time and kind of jump off the stage. I wasn't like Black Flag or, you know, Minor Threat, the hardcore mosh pit scene. It was just the way I always just played it. I was just always hitting it really hard.
Did you then go into music full time?
I have never been able to go into music full time. Come on, Dave. No, it's always been a part-time thing. I've always needed a day job, man.
It was just an outlet to get some of that energy out
initially. Yeah, it's fun.
And you like the music?
Yeah, yeah. I always try to join a band. You know, obviously, you like the music, but music that might not be accessible in the town you're in. In Seattle, you go anywhere you want and you can see a grunge band. So what we were doing was something with that energy, but something different, something unique, something that you can go, "Hey, you could record a practice and listen to that practice in your car going, that's good music. And that's why I started a rockabilly band in Savannah, because it needed one really badly.
It's like when I talk to the folks from the band In For A Penny, we always keep saying, yes, In For A Penny is the best Irish punk band in Savannah.
That sounds like something Sean would say, yeah.
No doubts. They're the best Irish punk band in Savannah. The fact that they're the only Irish punk band in Savannah, we don't get into
it. I've said that on stage a few times myself. Crazy Man Crazy Savannah's number one rockabilly band. Well, yeah.
It's good to have that uniqueness about it.
Yeah.
What was your progression up the coast? You said you stopped periodically heading up the coast of Seattle.
Yeah, I lived in L.A. for a while. I did about 3 years in the film industry in Los Angeles and, yeah, decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. I lived in Berkeley, California for a while and then across the bay in San Francisco for a while and then ended up in Seattle.
And how did you get from Seattle to Savannah?
Seattle is a beautiful city. I'm not going to get on Seattle's case or anything, but it is gray and rainy. And after about 12 years, it was time. Got a couple of kids, a wife, time to maybe get them closer to a little sunshine. So the idea was to move back down to California. You know, you start looking at rents and like, wow, it's really expensive out there. And my wife at the time, she has family from here. And she kind of kept joking all along, going, well, we could always move to Georgia. And I'm like, why would I want to move to Georgia? And then when we were looking at California, and then once again, the whole idea of moving to Georgia came back up. And I'm like, okay. And her family is from Tybee Island. So that's the magic word, Tybee Island, beach town. And I started looking into it, you know, and you go to Google Maps or whatever, and you find Savannah, and you zoom in and zoom in a little more and zoom in a little more, maybe one more zoom in, and you find this place called Tybee Island. And I started looking at the rents and the opportunities and the lifestyle. Yeah, sold just about everything we had, packed up the kids, the dogs, the cats, and drove across country and ended up in Tybee Island. Never been there before. Just kind of landed and went, okay, this will be weird. And that was it.
And of course, when you got to Tybee Island, you probably noticed a sign at the very end of US 80.
My other end is in San Diego. Yeah. Yeah, San Diego and Tybee Island, latitude 32. I say same latitude, different attitude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really more of a laid-back, relaxed attitude rather than... Because San Diego used to be at one time laid-back and relaxed, but it is now very urban.
Tybee Island today reminds me of growing up in San Diego in the 70s.
I was at the University of California, Irvine, from 69 to 72.
Okay.
I have relatives who do live in Southern California. When I retired, they said, so you're moving back here. At that point, we had our place out on Tybee. And I said, yeah, we're going to be right back as soon as two ex-professors can afford a beachfront condo in Southern California. We'll be right there.
You're right. Exactly. It's still beautiful out there.
It's still beautiful.
It's a different kind of beauty. You know, you've got the mountains, you've got the cliffs and everything. Mm-hmm. But then you come out that Tybee Road, man, that 5 miles where you got the Savannah River and the marsh. It just chills you out. All your worries go away on that road.
Except during the summer.
Well, it's still just a breathtaking scenery.
It is. It is beautiful. It's worth it. Living out there.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
When you were in Seattle, to go the different route, you went more acoustic, more country, and then sounds like you touched on rockabilly.
The project we put together for Justin Curtis when we played live, Justin is the singer. He would play acoustic guitar. I would play the upright bass. And we had a drummer who just played a single snare drum with brushes. That's it. No kick drums, no cymbals, no hi-hats, nothing. And man, we made a lot of noise just because of that upright bass percussion that you can get out of it and him strumming and that, you know, of the drums. Yeah, and people really, really responded to this feeling and the vibe and the energy of it. Justin Curtis is a cowboy, but definitely Americana and definitely rockabilly thrown in there. It's all part of the same culture in the same genre.
We have Stephen Palmer, the bass player of Crazy Man Crazy, in the studio. And so when you moved to Tybee Island, mm-hmm. how did you start to organize a rockabilly band out here?
Well, like I said, when we moved to Tybee Island, we sold everything, and I sold my bass and everything. So it took me a while to get back into that down here, getting ourselves settled in, getting the kids in schools and things like that. And it really wasn't for about, I want to say, 5 years before I even bought another upright bass. When I did, I started looking around Savannah, and the Savannah that I moved to in 2004 was different than the Savannah around 2010. I started noticing a subculture that wasn't there before. One or two more tattoo shops would start opening up. There's now a burlesque troupe in Savannah. Alternative music was kind of starting to make a change, and places like the Jinx were starting to book bands like the Reverend Horton Heat and things like this. I just started noticing, and it just felt like it was time. So somewhere around 2010, I started putting the word out there. And I always say what I was looking for was a Brian Setzer, a guy who could play guitar and sing like Brian Setzer, and then we can find a drummer, and that would be that. And it took me a long time to get people to kind of respond to what I was saying. I'm trying to start a rockabilly band, and people would contact me through Craigslist and go, well, I play blues and metal. And I'm like, well, we'll try. And it just didn't go very well for a while there. Then I kept placing the ad, looking for a singer. A drummer contacted me, because, well, I'm not a singer, but, man, I love rockabilly music. And I love Brian Setzer. I was like, oh, okay, great. So we started hanging out. That was the first drummer of Crazy Man Crazy. And then I kept placing the ad, looking for a guitar player who can sing, looking for a guitar player to sing. And this cat calls me and says, I can't play guitar, but I love rockabilly and I can sing it. I said, okay. You know, and he shows up, and in walks this guy. And everybody says the same thing to him. Man, you look like James Hetfield from Metallica. And he does. And that's where I met Sean the Con Man Conradson, lead singer and partner in crime in Crazy Man Crazy from pretty much day one. So here we were just hanging out in the basement with a drummer and a singer, no guitar player, literally playing songs on records and turning them up as loud as we can and kind of playing along with them and making a set list. And then eventually found a guitar player, and this was 2011. Crazy Man Crazy played its first show in August of 2011. And we joked that one of our big goals is someday, you know, we get to play the Jinx. Well, we played our first show in Tybee Island at Huckapoo's, and Jason Bible from the Train Wrecks came up to us after the show and said, hey, look, guys, we're playing the Jinx next Friday. You want to open for us? I'm like, well, that was easy. Yeah, okay, great. And again, I'll never forget the look on the crew at the Jinx's face when we hit the stage and we played hard and we didn't let up and we just showed them what we were made of. They all just came up after us like, where are you guys? Where are you from? It's like, oh yeah, we're Savannah and all that. And we've been playing there a couple of times a year, maybe more ever since, as well as all over town. So that's how Crazy Man Crazy started. It just started with an idea of, I heard the Bill Haley and the Comets song, Crazy Man Crazy. And I was like, man, that would be a great name for a band. And it turns out it is.
Crazy man crazy. Crazy man crazy. Crazy man crazy. Homeland of music's gone. When I go out and I hum on a tree, I find me a band with a solid beat. I grab my chick and we dance about. The next start fucking where we start to shout. We go crazy man crazy. Crazy man crazy. Crazy man crazy.
What is the general reception that you get when you say we have a rockabilly band?
You have to explain it.
You do.
I do. A lot of people will be like, oh, that. Or you just get that blank stare. When people say, what kind of music is your band? I go, rockabilly. And you kind of have to go, yeah, you know, it's like old Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Sun Records stuff. And if they are any more interested, and I get into what my description of rockabilly is, which I always call it just the original punk rock. These guys are going in the studio without rules, regulations, and just knocking out this kind of music that wasn't really commercial, but it was just so good and soulful and brilliant and wild and crazy. Rock and roll has a certain beat, but rockabilly has a certain beat. There's a lot of ways to describe it. Rock and roll makes you want to jump up and down. Rockabilly wants to make you jump side to side. It's dancing music. the other problem with trying to sell a rockabilly band or any band that is, I would say, your own specific thing is sometimes a lot of clubs won't want to book you because they have that same fear that, well, if we say this is a rockabilly band, people aren't going to walk in the door. And this has happened before. And the good thing about what we do in Crazy Man Crazy is sometimes it's hard for us to get them in the door. But once they're in the door, they stay. We have done a number of shows in clubs where we've started playing and there'd be maybe 20, 30 people and the music spills out in the street. Next thing you know, there's 50, 60. Next thing you know, there's 100 people in there and we can just keep them in there all night long.
And why do you think that's the case?
I think it has to go back to the general idea when we put Crazy Man Crazy together is we're not creating a band. What we want to do is we want to put on a show. In that, we've all given ourselves stage names. We all come up with different personas. You know, I'm Mr. Palmer on bass live. That name was given to me by Justin Curtis years ago. Sean the Con Man Conrads. And on drums right now, we have a cool cat, Rockabilly Davis. His name's Billy Davis. And Josh the Killer Keeney on guitar. And we bring that with us to each show. We also bring goofy things like stage props, so it gives the audience more to look at, banners. We are gimmicky to a degree, but there's band talent and the music to back it up. We're not just a bunch of talentless schlebs up there that are smearing peanut butter just to be punk rock. We're bringing the show to it. I act as an MC through the show. We'll play two or three, four songs. I'll introduce things, give a little rockabilly history. We have a prize wheel, man. We have a prize wheel. We call it the Wheel of Rockabilly. We've written 12 rockabilly songs on there, and we'll have members of the audience come up, spin the wheel, win a t-shirt, or whatever song it lands on, we play. So it is very engaging. It's very interactive. It's just fun. Not to mention the fact that there are some strong personalities on that stage, and we are having just so much fun with it, and the way we just kind of vibe off each other. When you watch Sean sing, that voice of his just knocks down a wall. Josh, man, that guy's playing guitar with a smile on his face all night long. He's having a great time. And Billy, man, that guy's a powerful drummer. And it just, again, the whole thing just works. It gives that beautiful rockabilly beat and rhythm and soul. It gives it oomph. And we just put it out there with all of what we have. We sweat like crazy. It's great. It's great. I could talk about this band all day, clearly.
And that's what I've noticed, is that people will come in confused, but within a song or two, they'll be rocking with you.
Right.
They'll be shaking, they'll be dancing. It is an amazing change that you see in individuals at a Crazy Man Crazy concert.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's kind of the goal.
Now, the personas, how do the personas that you have on stage match up with the personas that you are in real life?
Well, you got 3 out of 4 that are pretty much solid. I'm the oddball of the group. Sean Conradson, he is rockabilly life. He's in a car club. He works hard. He listens to the music. He drinks PBR. And Josh is, in a lot of the ways, the same. Now, a couple of years ago when Josh joined the band, he joined as our drummer. And yeah, he was a little metalhead drummer. But you look at him now and compared to pictures of 2 years ago, and oh man, yeah, the guy's full on rockabilly life now. Billy, he's a big rugby player and listens to the music. You have to have a love for the music. And that's where it really comes out. If you love listening to it, you'll love playing it. Myself, I'm just kind of a tidy guy. I'm running around in shorts and flip-flops most of the time, but I bring it when I'm on stage. That whole character idea just kind of kicks in with me.
Describe your character.
Somewhat of fun, nutty, snarky, cocky. I know what I'm doing up there. I know I'm doing it well, man. And I'm going to show you what I'm made of. And I do have a lot of fun with it. A lot of rockabilly bands do this thing where they just kind of have to MC. It gives Sean a chance to take a deep breath, sip a beer, and I just kind of bring people into it and talk to them about rockabilly music when we're playing things like Wanda Jackson. Who's heard of Wanda Jackson? Maybe some people out there, but I'm going to tell you about it. We do a B.B. King song of all things. We do it our way. Yeah, my character's nuts. I like things to be organized. I like things to be like on point. But I love that chaos that can also come from a live show. I'm diligent about putting together a set list, and then we get on stage and, yeah, set list, schmet list. We'll never play any of this. It's just fun. Yeah. It's good to come unglued.
It's really interesting because you see, of course, Billy is kind of constrained because of the equipment, and Sean is the lead singer, so he's out in front and center. And then it's Josh that sort of comes forward and back and forward and back. Mm-hmm. But other than occasional banter between you and the others, the show seems to be centered around you. You're the director of the
Almost.
Band.
Almost. Sean made a brilliant comment one day about rockabilly music and Crazy Man Crazy particularly. He said, "I may be the singer, but that bass is the front man." Not the bass player, the bass. And when he said that, I was like, okay, so yeah, my job is to be puppet master to make this thing be entertaining to people. And, you know, you see people standing on them and spinning the bass around. I just like to get the good tone. I obviously will screw around with that sometimes. But the idea is to show people what this upright bass can do. Let them hear what it can do. Yeah. But maybe I like just bouncing around too. I mean, everybody in that band's charismatic. Josh, we just finished up a show in Las Vegas, and man, Josh is a rock star that day. He was just a full-blown rock star. He was great.
We have Stephen Palmer, the bass player of Crazy Man Crazy, in the studio. I hate to perseverate on your character.
Okay, it's okay.
But it's Mr. Palmer is your character?
Correct.
It's sort of like casual elegance.
Okay.
You come out with a fedora type hat.
Sometimes, yeah.
And you come out with a bass, and you often will come with a tune, or you'll just say, "This is Crazy Man Crazy,"
yeah,
and go right into a tune. But then you'll step forward to do back announce of the songs and say what you're going to be doing next and talk a little bit about history of the song. And you move around the stage with that bass as if it was a guitar. You seem constantly in motion, leaning forward to the point where I think you and the bass are going to hit the floor soon, and leaning back and swaying side to side.
Yeah.
And there's really a lot of dynamism going on there.
I wish I could say any of that is pre-planned. I don't know. I do have these moments that on stage that I'm just having fun. I'm looking out. People are dancing. People are having a great time. I'm with my buddies on stage. We're just knocking it out of the park, and it's just fun, and you just can't beat that feeling, and I'm just gonna smile and wave about that. But then there's also those moments where the band is so locked down into the sound that I don't want to look at anybody. I don't want to interact with anybody. I just want to put my head down, hunker down into what I'm doing, and just listen to it. And just go, man, we are in the pocket with the groove and the roots. And there's the outside stuff that you look at that's fun. Oh, look at all these people dancing. Yeah. Every time that music gets so intense and so perfect, yeah, I shut all that out and just listen to the music, man, and be like, oh, boys, we're doing it right now. This is great. I don't know. None of it is anything that I work on at home or practice in front of a mirror. I just get up on stage and go, hey, everybody, let's have some fun.
And how often is it that you feel the band is really in the pocket?
The way we've put the set list together is because in a lot of situations, you got to dial in the sound. And, you know, you have your opening song, you have your second song. But I would usually say by third song, we're warmed up, we're ready to go. And that's when we'll usually play, you know, something that the audience knows really, really well. Because now they're also warmed up and ready to go. So usually a good third song would be something like, we'll do a Stray Cats cover, or that's when we'll pop in an Elvis song or something, and people just, their ears will perk up and they perk up. And then, yeah, then it's just a a runaway train from there. So I'd say it happens, usually speaking, first two songs, okay, boys, here we go. Okay, we got this, we got this, we got this. And then song three, yeah, we're ignited. And we go.
The music that Crazy Man Crazy plays, the rockabilly, that might be my bias, I find it totally infectious.
Yeah.
Is that what you generally see with crowds, or have you had crowds that still wonder what you're doing?
I get a lot of questions after shows from people going, you guys are great. You're not oldies. You're not really rock and roll, but you're not psychobilly. I don't really know how to describe what we do. The mission was, we're a rockabilly band, and every now and then rockabilly visits its neighbor country and its other neighbor swing, but we just bring it into that pocket. And the goal was just to do it with oomph. Rockabilly in itself, back in the 50s, 56, 57, you could only get to it on radio or even jukeboxes. And you have to look at the perspective of where the teenagers were coming from. This is a post-World War II teenagers. You know, a lot of America at that time was very Puritan and very white picket fences. And yeah, you had some of the Beat Generation going on. And this Elvis Presley came out and he was mass marketed. People just lost their minds over what it was. And the rock star idea was born. And the cool thing about listening to it on records and going to jukeboxes and having to hear it on the radio, nobody knew if these artists, what the color of their skin was. It was literally this hard rocking, almost sinful music that was absolutely colorblind. And in that, you can hear the performances from like Gene Vincent's second album. Come on. They're just maniacs in the studio. They're screaming, they're yelling, they're having a good time. Okay, great. You listen to it by today's standards with modern technology and all the years of production that we've had since that kind of music. You listen to it and it's got a rawness to it. And it's kind of got a neat oldie sound to it. Crazy Man Crazy doesn't have that sound because we're simply using modern drums and modern amps and modern. So how do we capture that feel? Well, we don't speed up the song at all. If we're doing a cover song of like Bebop Alula, we're going to play it at the same tempo, the same vibe, but just we're going to give it that little bit of oomph that it was intended to originally. So yeah, I think that's what makes us different. It's an internal, soulful, beautiful feel that rockabilly comes with inherently, but when we give it the modern oomph, it'll knock your socks off.
Have you had audiences that don't get up and dance?
Not really. Well, there's always some people. And, you know, we're a local band, so yeah, we'll play restaurants and all that. But yeah, at some point in time, people dance. It's very rare that they wouldn't.
How do you like performing at something like the Tybee Post Theater, which is really more a theater setting,
yeah,
versus something like the Jinx, which is really more of a club setting?
I love it all, man. I love it all. I love the Tybee Island Social Club, tiniest stage in town, and we'll all just get up there and play to a dinner crowd. But again, like I said, there's always that little sense of chaos at our shows, and by the end of the night, it was just fun. It's intimate. It's great. Clubs are great. Clubs are fantastic. Just because you know the volume is there. It's loud. You know they could hear you on the street. But something like the Stage at Bay or the Tybee Post Theater, those big stages where you just have room to run around and you just kind of look out there and go, this is kind of classy little joint here. You get a kick out of that too. You're not going to cuss and swear as much as maybe you would in other venues, but to have those lights on you, to feel like you are on a stage and you can just kind of make a different kind of connection with the audience that way. Yeah, it's fun.
At a place like Stage on Bay, where you're the opening act,
yeah,
you're known by the people there, and so they hire you to be the opening act for someone else. How do you sense the balance that you have to do as the opening act?
We opened for Big Bad Voodoo Daddy at the Stage on Bay, and that was one of those shows that I just had to bug the living daylights out of the people that run that and just go, come on, man, this is going to be a great show. This is going to be a great show. But a lot of times it's the touring bands. They either want to bring their own or they want to call it out and go, okay, well, we don't like these guys or these guys are too similar. I know there's certain bands, well, if we have an upright bass, we don't want another upright bass opening for us, yada, 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 yada. I was just persistent enough, and I finally, I think Charlie talked him into, come on, man, give us the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy show, and he did, and man, that was a fun show. That was one of those shows that we just went up there, did what we had to do, knocked it out of the park. I keep saying that, those silly expressions of mine. But yeah, we did a really good show that night. We did a really, really, really good show. We impressed ourselves. We impressed everybody. And we got a lot of comments, people coming up to us afterwards saying things like, you know, I spent $30 to see Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. I got my money's worth just from you guys. And a lot of people just wanted to take a quick picture. And yeah, that was good for the soul that night. We got a lot of good video from people. And in fact, we've posted a couple of videos, and it's really neat to see audience members holding their phones up. Even though I'm not a huge fan of that, you know, put your phones down, come on, enjoy the moment. There were a lot of phones up at certain times, and I'm like, people are Instagramming us and videoing this. This is great. Yeah, those kind of things are big experiences and a lot of fun.
That was an interesting setup because they had seating up front and dancing in the back.
Yeah.
Can you connect with the back of the hall?
Oh, yeah. I'll scan a room. I'll figure out who to talk to.
And then you have the balcony there, too.
Oh, that's right, up there. Yeah. It's a big place. A lot of fun, though.
And to me, that was the perfect match. That was a match made in heaven.
That was a good show.
Because you had the straight rockabilly, and then you converted over to swing.
Right.
And both about the same era, 40s, maybe more 40s into 50s with them, and you're maybe 50s into late 50s. But it just was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, that was a good show. We've had some good shows, you know. The other ones we like to look at back is when we had the honor of opening up for Dick Dale. And again, kind of the same thing, but very, very different. Dick Dale, obviously, surf guitar legend. And here's this band that's coming up as a rockabilly band. Again, well, you can kind of piece it together with, is it oldies? But again, somebody like Dick Dale, you go see him live. That's when you feel the music. That's when you hear the jungle rhythm and the bass and that guitar of his, that noise he's making. You can listen to it on a record, and it's groovy. But, man, you go see that guy live, and it's like, what is going on? It's amazing. I believe he just turned 80, 81. Still killing it out there. And, yeah, for us to be able to open for somebody like him, again, you kind of have to bring your A game and see what happens. And I think we did. And it turned out to just be another one of those nights where different kinds of music, but from the same general idea. And that was another fun one.
With Crazy Man Crazy, because your attitude is you're not a band, you're a show.
Right.
It really comes across. And unlike the others where you go saying, you know, I could have bought the album.
Yeah.
But not with Crazy Man Crazy. With Crazy Man Crazy, it's the experience.
Yeah.
That is much of what you came for and much of what you leave with.
Right. Exactly, Dave. Thank you. Nailed it.
You're listening to WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
I'm Rob Hessler.
And I'm David Laughlin.
Now through September 14th, Location Gallery hosts 300 and Under, an art show to benefit WRUU, Savannah Soundings, 107.5 FM.
300 and Under. Is that shekels or drachma? Are we talking yen, big stones? What are we doing here?
This exhibition features affordable artwork by over 40 artists, many of whom have appeared on our show, Art on the Air, which you can listen to right here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
We have the Noise and Location Gallery at 417 Whitaker Street has sights to behold. What's more, visitors can purchase unique Savannah art from there, which benefits this radio station and our creative community. Stop by and check out this opportunity while it lasts and see a unique varietal display of what Savannah has to offer. With this fundraiser, you can bring art home and listen to WRUU FM 107.5 on the way. It's all good.
Location Gallery is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. More information can be found by searching 300 and Under on Facebook.
This portion of WRUULP Savannah Soundings programming is brought to you by the Savannah Jazz Festival, which brings jazz, blues, and films to Forsyth Park and other locations around Savannah from September 23rd to the 29th. The Savannah Jazz Festival is presented by the Coastal Jazz Association with investment from the City of Savannah. Evening concerts followed by nightly jam sessions bring artists such as Bernie Williams, Brian Miller, Jane Bunnett, and Chuck Lavelle to Savannah. For more information, go to savannahjazzfest.com.
On Friday mornings at 11 a.m., please join me for my show called Beyond the Liner Notes. I'm your host, Brian Renner. Each week, I feature a different genre of music and provide some background information about artists and recordings. Tune in on Fridays at 11 for Beyond the Liner Notes.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight, we have Stephen Palmer, the bass player of Crazy Man Crazy, in the studio. The band was recently out at a rockabilly convention in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Viva Las Vegas, 21st year of Viva Las Vegas. Wow. The festival is old enough to legally drink in Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas, it's a mecca for anything rockabilly lifestyle. Tom Ingram, the guy that's been putting this on for a lot of years, it's not just this convention. He's got so much going on. He's got his own radio network. He's got car shows. He does everything. They take over an entire hotel. It starts on a Thursday night. It goes through Sunday. And hundreds of bands play. And then on Saturday, with everything also going on in the hotel, they fill up the parking lot. Big outdoor stage. 800-some beautiful, amazing custom cars, vendor booths. They have a pinup contest. Lots and lots of bands play in the hotel. It is just amazing the number of pompadours and dresses. And Sunday, they have a big pool party. But yeah, we submitted. It's a dream to play something like this. For some amazing, unknown reason to us, they decided to put us on the main stage on Saturday with the biggest names of the festival. What a trip. What an honor. To have our name on the poster with Mitch Polzak, Hot Rod Lincoln, Dwayne Eddy, Jerry Lee Lewis, and the Stray Cats. There it is, right up there with all of them, Crazy Man Crazy. So it was a long day, you know, because we were the first band of the day, and as with most festivals, you know, there weren't a billion people there, but just to be on that enormous stage that we knew that Jerry Lee Lewis was going to be on later. You know, Jerry Lee Lewis, Dave, I mean, take a second. It was crazy, man. Crazy. Can I tell a funny story about that?
Sure.
When you fill out the form as a band, they understand that if you're traveling, you can't really bring a drum set with you, an upright bass or anything. So, yeah, you fill out the contract that says, would you like us to supply musical instruments for you? And you go, yeah, we'll need an upright bass, a guitar amp, this, that. And most of the stages inside the hotel, whether it's in a conference room or a bar or a big stage, they just have it all there. They have guitar amps on the stage and an upright bass and everything. So yeah, we didn't bring anything. Well, we showed up at soundcheck. The stage manager comes over and he was asking about, you know, where are all your instruments? And we're like, we don't have them. He's like, well, you are Crazy Man Crazy. You guys are going on here in about an hour. And we're like, well, yeah, but we were told you guys would have musical instruments for us. And he's like, what? And so all of a sudden there's this little panic moment of like, all the work we've put into it, all the traveling, they didn't read that part of the contract that said that they'd give us instruments. So the guy was super cool about it. Matt, out in Las Vegas, thanks again, buddy. He just rallied. He found us a guitar amp immediately, a bass amp immediately. He goes over here and says, we'll just use Jerry Lee Lewis's drummer's drums. We're like, okay, that's pretty awesome. Side note, Jerry Lee Lewis ended up on stage. I noticed that his drummer was actually Kenny Aronoff, one of the most world-renowned studio drummers. So the fact that our drummer played Kenny Aronoff's drums was pretty wild. But yeah, I guess the upright bass was a little harder to track down than they were hoping for. And so the clock is ticking, man. The clock is ticking. And we're doing sound check. We're miking drums. And it's getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And then another guy comes up and says, upright bass, huh? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, gut strings? I'm like, if you got it. He's like, okay. I'm trying. Basically, we got to about 5 minutes before we were supposed to start. And here comes this guy scrambling from the backstage, running up to me with an upright bass. And I was like, okay, cool. We got it. Plugged it in, set some levels, tuned it up really quick, turned around and said, hi, everybody. We're Crazy Man Crazy from Savannah, Georgia. So that was the stress level of what we were dealing with up until basically seconds before we were supposed to start. The energy was pretty high on that show, too.
And that combined with the fact that you are on a stage where the biggest names in rockabilly will be performing.
Right.
And you're the leadoff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Again, a lot of this will take a little bit of time to settle in and just look back at and go, we have been very, very fortunate to play with the people that got you into this kind of music in the first place, mm-hmm. the Stray Cats.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that really brought rockabilly around, and I listened to them, and I loved them. And like I said, I had an upright bass at the time, and you're just going, how do you get that noise out of there? They were my inspiration to get into this kind of music and learn how to play it and get down and dirty with it and to actually have my band's name on that poster. Yeah, man, that's pretty cool.
That's something that will be laminated and kept close to your heart.
100 of them laminated and kept close to my heart just in case I lose one.
We have Stephen Palmer, the bass player of Crazy Man Crazy, in the studio. How do you use media in terms of promoting the band, or is it pretty much word of mouth?
I don't know if word of mouth really exists anymore. When we have a show coming up, we use Instagram and Twitter and mostly a lot of Facebook, because you can just share it to pages, create those events, invite all your friends, remind people, just let them know this is what's happening. It's going to be a very, very cool show. So if you want to know when we're playing, what we're doing, I don't know if I can promote us too much. Just go to our Facebook page. Go to our Facebook page. We have all of the events. We've got some cool ones coming up. Look it up. But yeah, we use social media a lot.
How do you balance doing the band and life in general?
That can be a challenge. We've all got day jobs. We've all got obligations. And sometimes practice schedules can get in the way. Sometimes you just have to turn down a gig because somebody's got a vacation already lined up. I would love it, love it, love it, love it if there was somewhere that it could just flip a little bit, where you could just work part-time and play music more often, you know? But when you're dealing with four or five guys in a band, there's scheduling conflicts. And you just kind of have to work it out, especially if you want to do things like write new music and recording an album. And, you know, being in a band could be a full-time job. It just doesn't pay like a full-time job does. And, yeah, we can't, we're not kids. Well, Josh is a kid. I like my house on Tybee. I want to still live there. I don't want to live out of my van just to record an album instead.
You have originals as well as
tons.
Covers.
Our set list is pretty much 50-50 at this point in time. Okay. So when we're going to go play a 3 or 4 hour set, we mix it up. And a lot of our covers that we have in our clip, they're not just rockabilly covers. Everybody does this. They take a popular song and then they put their own style of band's twist on it. And with Crazy Man Crazy, we've done covers of Led Zeppelin's Rock and Roll. We'll do a rockabilly version of that. Aerosmith's Walk This Way. And right now, one of the more popular ones we're doing is a cover of Billy Idol's Rebel Yell. So here's this new wave kind of rock. And then we just said, well, that'll transfer over easily. And we worked it and we took out the keyboards and the weird electronic drum sound effects and we scaled it down and made a rockabilly song out of Rebel Yell. Oh man, talk about a crowd pleaser. Everybody loves that one.
And so who writes the songs, the originals?
Everybody. Very, very good team effort going on with all of us, where sometimes maybe I'll just have a drum track and I'll be goofing around with GarageBand and I'll throw something down and bring it to the band. And they'll look at me and be like, it's horrible. But what if we did this? Okay, well, what if I sang this melody instead of what your horrible singing is? And I go, okay, please. And then we bring a different drum, and then that's when the process starts. Now, Sean and I will sit down and write lyrics together, and we feed off each other very, very well. And then we'll come up with a general melody, then he'll take it home and come back a week later and go, hey guys, I switched it to this. Josh, the Killer Keeney, he's killing it with songwriting these days. Three of our songs that are going to be on the new album, they're his. He just wrote them, brought them to us, and we're like, dude, these are great. Okay, cool. There's no one songwriter, and there's no one boss that says, here's the song, here's how it's going to go, the end. We'll play around with the song until we're like, oh, okay, yeah, there it is. Got it. Whether it needed just one more of those little stops or whether it needed to be thrown against the wall a few more times. Good collaborative effort.
And so everybody gets credit on the songs.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about some of your songs. I Go Crazy Man.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
This one was actually written for us by a gentleman by the name of Michael Roach. He said, hey, here's a fun little song I wrote. And he, you know, threw it together in GarageBand. And it's got a lot of weird starts and stops. And it's, you know, I'm ready to rock. I'm ready to rumble, ready to roll on down the line. It's just got some great lyrics, a good punchy beat to it. Again, just like every progression of the songs in this band, they started out of like, this is kind of a fun little song, but eventually it kind of became a band favorite.
I'm ready to rock, ready to run, ready to rock on down the line. I'm ready to rock, ready to rumble, ready to roll on down the line. I go crazy man, crazy man, crazy man every time. Beat up the drums, bark guitar. And when the bass man walks the line, beat up the drums, bark guitar. And when the bass man walks the line, I go crazy man, crazy man, crazy man every time. Well, I'm in my car, got the radio blasting loud. Yeah! I sing rock to the music, and I sing it proud. I'm ready to dance, ready to swing, ready to strut my stuff and style. I'm ready to dance, ready to swing, ready to strut my stuff and style.
Also, Michael Roach wrote another song. At the time he gave it to us, it was called Real Cool Dude. And it was about a real cool dude who has the attitude and his dancing shoes, you know? We play around with that one a lot to the point where we changed a lot of the words, and now it's called Rockabilly Dude. And so that's going to be on the album. That's a fun little tongue-in-cheek song about just, you know, are you really a rockabilly dude, man? You know, you got your car, you got your hair, but come on, really? Do you really live the life?
He's a rockabilly dude. He's got the attitude. He was born to lose. He's a rockabilly dude. He's a rockabilly guy. But he has to try. We'll be right back.
That's kind of fun. The other songs that we write, there's emotion to them. They're cool, they're fun, but when you listen to songs like Southbound, it's a song about redemption, but there's some dark stuff going on in that song, just really weird, like bloodstains on your shirt. Whose blood? Where did this blood come from? Why are you running from the law? Is it clear? Is it not? What's across the border? Is it redemption to life itself? Or is that where you're going to end it all kind of thing? It's a very mysterious, very dark, gritty song. This was written by one of our drummers, and it started out by having a lot of really cool words that didn't make a lot of sense. But they were really cool, and we sang them for that way for years. And it was Southbound Till I Die, the sheriff wants to take my rights. And it's like, we started looking at it going, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And we just kind of tweak them around a little bit. So now the line is Southbound Till I'm Free, the good Lord's forgotten me. And it all of a sudden tells the story of a guy that is looking for freedom because he just feels like a forgotten soul. And it just makes a lot more sense.
My name.
but there's a poetry to it that's kind of fun. Then we'll write a song called Hot Rod Hooligan, which is pretty much about Sean and his life, and, you know, growing up in Arizona and then coming out here and meeting the woman he was going to marry, being in a car club. Well, it sounds at first like this is just about a song about things that have gone, but it is really a story of a journey of a man who found himself through rock and roll music, through rockabilly music, through traveling, through love, and it becomes this really sweet little endearing love song by the time it's all done. The song's called, you know, I Live the Life of a Hot Rod Hooligan, but when you're really listening to it, there's a strong sense of emotion to it as well. Then, let's see, we've got songs that I can't tell because the FCC rules, but yeah, there's a song out there. If you go to our SoundCloud page, you'll know what I'm talking about when you see it, and that is just a brutal onslaught of a lot of swearing, a lot of just blood and murder and fighting and just... There's always seems to be this overriding kind of weird little obscure outlaw theme, people looking for something, running from something or running towards something. A lot of songs, they're about love and life and music and things that, you know, are relatable, but not a lot of people will sit there and talk to you about. But when you hear that song, you go, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, I get that. All right, cool.
And how does a song like that go into your larger set? Where would you place a song?
Southbound. Country beat, so I'm going to put it between things that are classic rockabilly. I don't like to do a lot of like the same, like I don't want to do a country song followed by a country song followed by a country song. So we're definitely not going to play something like Mystery Train around Southbound. Just because it is such a great song, such a great song. Yeah, we kind of have our greatest hits that if we're playing like an opening set, we'll have the warm-up, we'll get into the groove in that song three, we'll hit him with something a little weird like a Billy Idol cover right after we do a Wanda Jackson song, and then we hit him with what we feel are some of our best, most eclectic kind of music. We're working on one right now called Cuban Slide. That'll be on the album. Josh has got this great song that he brought to us not too long ago, Sold My Soul for a Better 9 to 5. That's almost got a blues vibe to it, but it's, again, just the way we hit it with that rockabilly beat and soul is a lot of fun. And then, yeah, classic songs like Sin and Tonic and Southbound and the one we can't say on this radio station. it's a real crowd pleaser. But it gets, hey, people, we were in Atlanta and somebody yelled the song title, you know, they wanted to hear it. And we're like, wow, okay, you've heard this one. Awesome. I feel like I've babbled on for a long time. If I'm allowed to promote the band, it's crazymancrazy.com and facebook.com/crazymancrazy. And go there. Look at pictures. I'll try to keep some things posted here soon. And stay tuned for our record.
We have had Stephen Palmer, better known as Mr. Palmer, of Crazy Man Crazy, the bass player, on the show tonight. And I want to thank you so very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, that ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.